everyone. Welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 165. This is a show about Linux, where we talk about Linux tips, tricks, news, upcoming hardware, software, anything that, yes, tickles our Linux fancy. I'm filling in for Cody Cooper tonight. Do not adjust your dial. I have a shaved face. Cody's a little manlier than me. I have a splinter, so I may wince a couple times during the show, but I'm Martin Obando, and I'm here with my good friend, Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. What's up, Door?
Hey, Martin. Things are doing good. I am now sworn. I've started documenting all the ways that I swear my children are trying to make me go insane.
That, having two kids and myself, that's a long list.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid, because if I ever stop and look at that list, I think it's only going to make me actually go more insane. Right.
Don't look. Look away. It's like right. Medusa. You just look away. Don't look in the eyes.
Well, the goal is, like, in 20 years, my sons will stumble across it, and they won't believe it, I'm sure, but, you know.
That's right. Make them feel bad by, here, look what you've done to me. Look at how guilty I am.
Exactly. We do have a special guest this week. If you listen to Linux Podcast, you've also heard Jonathan Adu is making the rounds. We have some important news, some important updates. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jonathan, but it's basically like a continental shift.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I guess I'm saving the best for last if I'm making the rounds, right?
I hope so.
Well, you haven't been on Tilt or Linux Action Show.
Geeksters.
Or Linux. No, you have been on Linux Luddites. Yep. You haven't been on Geeksters.
No.
There's a whole
Geeksters lot. They might have me on. I don't know if they want me back.
I don't know. I got to talk to those hosts. They're kind of, I don't know. They don't have beards. Let me just put that way. Actually, Tim may. Never mind.
Well, yeah, we don't want to challenge Tim. Before we get started, I want to just remind people of one thing and then one new thing. One, thinkpenguin.com. Do not forget. The most important vote you can ever do is vote with your dollars. Please go to thinkpenguin.com. Check it out. Even if you don't buy from them. Go to their site, look at it, take a gander, see what they have to offer, just so the next time you need something, if this time you can't use them, maybe next time you can. Support those who support open hardware, open BIOS, open software, and good product. There's not enough of them in the world, I'll just say that. Big shout out to Chris, who I hope to see at OLF here in about 2 months, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, very cool. You have to introduce me.
I think. When I'm drunk, I'll point at him. He's the guy over there kind of thing.
I'll point him out.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Exactly.
At least I can trust somebody in this chat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. The second thing I want to comment on, I'm going to keep this as short as possible, people. LastPass, if you haven't heard of LastPass, just unsubscribe now. Okay.
Ouch.
Because that's the truth. Who hasn't heard of LastPass?
Stop this thing and just go away.
Yeah. Right. Go listen to Kim Kardashian's podcast or something.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with Kim Kardashian's podcast. Go ahead.
Who asked you? We're about to talk to Cody. LastPass is the all-in-one solution for password saving, password creation, and note saving in a very secure fashion. It's not the quote-unquote EFF-approved solution of password management, but I can say in my heart of hearts, it is the utterly safe, dynamic one that works on all platforms that you can take offline with a trust no one security model behind it. I like LastPass. Everyone I know who's ever tried LastPass likes it. We have a free 1 year subscription to give away. And I know it's only a $12 prize, but still, that's why there's going to be a very low barrier of entry to winning this contest. Between now and OLF, that's the time frame I'm going to set forth because I don't know when people listen to this. I'm going to ask people, send me an email, podcast@linuxwiththerestofus.com, and just tell me what you think a good idea would be to do in video form with Linux. What do people want to know how to do on Linux? What do new users need help with Linux? What do Windows users looking at Linux as a possible solution need to understand better how to do?
And just to, Ohio Linux Fest is October 24th. So that's you have until October 24th.
Yes, period. And they have to be I'm in the Eastern time zone of the United States of America. So midnight, the first day of OLF, that's the cutoff date. Just send me just anything, anything you think would be helpful for new users to know how to do in Linux. And I'll just pick whoever that is. And if I have more than one, because right now I think I actually have more than one, but I don't want to dedicate myself to it. I believe I'm going to have more than one available to me. If I do, we will have multiple winners that will be notified via mail, email, of course.
Very nice.
Okay. Okay, Jonathan. First off, let's go over what we have to go over. What is Sonar GNU Linux? Why should we pay any mind?
Sure. Sonar GNU Linux is a Linux distribution focused on assistive technology, accessible computing, adaptive technology, however you'd like to say it. Basically, it's gearing towards people with all types of disabilities. The end goal of Sonar, for me, is there are roughly 1 billion people in the world with some type of disability. My end goal is for Sonar to meet their needs and to give them access to computer once and for all.
Sounds
very cool. Very cool. Kenneth, how are some of the ways that you're making this happen?
Sure. So the first thing is Sonar can be installed by a person that's completely blind. And so a person can, I guess they would have trouble downloading Sonar if they can't get to a computer first. But if someone burned them a DVD or gave them a USB stick or something with Sonar on it, a blind person could take that and install on a computer by themselves with no sighted help whatsoever. The Orca screen reader comes up talking right away in the live session, and it walks through the installer completely. And like I said, a blind person can go through everything, reboot the computer, boot back into a completely accessible operating system, and go on their way, instant messaging, going online, surfing the net, sending email, editing audio, whatever they would like to do, short of editing a video. And that's just one of the things that Sonar offers with accessibility. It also includes screen magnification. So if people have low vision, they can magnify the screen and blow up the icons and the text and everything. There's also a font included for people with dyslexia. So if they have dyslexia, they switch the font over in the system itself, and it changes over the fonts for all the icons and the menus. And I don't think it actually changes the fonts in like every application. I need to double check that, but it might, but I'm not 100% sure on that. It also has on-screen keyboards, so if you have low motor skills, maybe only the use of one hand, you can use the on-screen keyboard. If you can't use a regular keyboard, you can just use a mouse or a trackball, and you can use the on-screen keyboard. It also has eye/head tracking software, so just with any webcam, as long as the Linux kernel installs the driver, it tracks the eye or head movement of, like, say, a quadriplegic, and it will move the cursor on the screen, and the person can control the computer just by moving their head or their eyes. So with the combination of that and the on-screen keyboard, they could essentially have complete control over a computer and do whatever they wish.
Well, we've talked in the past about this. You and I have talked about this. We've had you on Geeksters. We've talked on Linux for the Rest of Us about this. And from that time to this time, I'm kind of blown away, honestly. I'm surprised at the giant steps you've taken to make this a better product.
Yeah, and we're also, thanks to Jezra, fame of Linux Outlaws, he has written, it's kind of funny, he wrote this program called Blather, and it's kind of a replacement for Dragon, naturally speaking, but it's way more powerful. But I heard him on this podcast one day, Hacker Public Radio, and he's talking about this program, Blather, that he made. And he's like, you know what? I came home, and I wanted to be able to come home and just say, computer, play Black Sabbath. And then Black Sabbath would start playing. And he's like, so I went ahead and I did that. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, he doesn't even realize what he just enabled on Linux. And so now we're hoping in the next month or two, we're going to have Blather fully integrated into Sonar. I spoke with Jezra, and We sort of have our own fork of Blather, because I want to take it much farther than where he's gotten it to. He has it running and doing exactly what he wants it to do, so he doesn't feel like he should add anything else to it. So he's totally cool with us. We forked it. We have our own version of Blather on our Gatorius page, and we will be implementing Blather, like I said, in the next month or two on Sonar. And you can literally control anything in the system with Blather. So we'll have voice recognition within Sonar. I'm hoping it'll even be possible to install Sonar just through talking, you know, using Blather. There'll be voice dictation. Like I said, the sky's the limit with Blather, so it's going to open up a whole nother avenue of accessibility.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've heard him on, I believe now, I think 3, possibly 4 HPR episodes demonstrating Blather, talking about Blather. And I got to say, to anyone who doesn't know what it is, just watch an episode of Star Trek and you see how they communicate with the computer. That's basically what he's able to do. He's basically, I mean, the only thing I don't think he can do yet is run diagnostics.
there's a small hurdle right now, which is what we're going to look into fixing that hurdle. The one sort of problem right now with Blather is you need to like understand bash scripting. So if you want to add like a new functionality to Blather to gain voice recognition over a certain part of the system, you do have to understand bash scripting, and you do have to understand, not a lot, but you have to kind of understand the underpinnings of the Linux operating system, and you need to know exactly like what's calling what when you like click on, say if you click on a Firefox icon, you need to know exactly what's being called like in the background, you know, from a terminal standpoint. So it's not impossible, but there is a bit of a hurdle. But if you understand bash scripting and what certain calls are being made when you open programs, the sky's the limit. Like you can get Blather to do anything. So in the future, what we would like to do is almost have like I guess part of this is going to be hard if someone can't really control their computer without talking, but we want to make it easier to add more functionality for each person, because every person is going to have, you know, there are a handful of tasks that no one else really does. So we're going to want to make like sort of a GUI way to add like functionality to it. So where you can like kind of click on a box and say, okay, this next thing that I do, I want you to record the action. So you like click on a box and almost like kind of record the action of the desktop. You like click on the program, you know, do a few things and then hit stop or something. And then in another text box, be like, okay, when I say this word, I want you to run the command that I just showed you that I did. And then save that to the file, the .conf file for Blather, and then now you've just added a new command within Blather. So we're thinking of trying to do something like that.
Gotcha. Well, the one thing that I will honestly suggest, this might be a bridging technology, quote unquote, to sound really hokey. AutoKey is a X11 application in Linux that can basically do some trickery, like. It looks like it's all available on code.google.com. I don't know about any place else. But in the application, it has a record.
Oh, really?
To where you say, start recording now by clicking a button. You then go type stuff, click stuff, drag stuff, whatever. And it can at least record stuff. I don't know if it's going to record the right things, but it might be one of those things that might get you.
Yeah, that sounds like it's a step in the right direction. Definitely. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Right now, I'm a super off the wall question, because honestly, personally, I want to ask different questions than other people because I'm different. My wife tells me all the time. You said Gitorious.
Yes.
Everybody else on the planet I talk to seem to be only able to pronounce GitHub. Mm. Yet you, every time I talk to you, I always hear you mention Gitorious.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to take for granted they're the same basic technology, with the same basic type of features available as a web service.
Yes. The only difference is the GitHub platform is proprietary software. It's closed source. Gitorious is completely free. You can download the Gitorious software and run your own Gitorious server if you wish. GitHub does not offer that.
That is very good to know, as my new title at my 9-to-5 is Solutions Architect.
There you go. So you might have a solution to put in your pocket.
Well, you want to hear something scary?
All right, yeah.
On Microsoft's official page for Visual Studio 2013 and Team Foundation Server, which is a server product used to help organize task and code revisioning, it says in its documentation that it supports Git as its back end.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the only difference. They both have the same sort of model of where you can pay them, where they'll, you know, give you special hosting if you have like a big company and kind of brand, you know, the site for you and stuff like that. Like, you could have, you know, your company name .gatorius.org. You know, they'll do, you know, hosting and stuff for you, and you can pay for that. But like I said, Gatorius is totally free, and you can run, download Gatorius software itself, run your own instance yourself on your own server. GitHub does not let you do that.
Very cool, very cool. And this is the one thing I want people to make sure that they get, that they understand, that they get. The only way I can really put this is in almost a non-politically correct way, which I don't care, which is, there's a lot of people out there that say they're a part of something, that say that they're doing something, and they really might only do it as a hobby, which is not talking bad about them. But Jonathan, in every shape, manner, and form, talks the talk and walks the walk. He is blind. He is trying to make a difference for other users with accessible issues. He's also a advocate of the usage of free and open software, and he actually uses it to the nth degree. He does everything in his power to make sure that when he propagates solutions to other people, he tries to make sure that they're free and open software. I mean, he's on Google Hangouts right now with me, which means he's open to using other solutions when he has to. But he actually tries to make an honest-to-goodness effort whenever he does something. He uses free and open solutions. And that's why whenever Jonathan asks me of anything, I try to help him out in any shape or form, because I know when he asks me for something, he's also doing it himself. So I personally want to thank you for taking the extra step, Jonathan, and putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I've had other people say, like, oh, man, you should put on GitHub. You're going to get more traction. I'm like, yeah, well, it may be, but I'd rather stay on, you know, a platform that would rather, you know, be free software. Git itself is free software, so I'd rather just stick with that.
Right. Kind of continue on with the same path that you're going.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we did have, though, a universal shift in Sonar here with this latest release.
Am I correct? Yeah. We're running on Manjaro. I mean Manjaro.
You mean Arch?
Yeah, we switched over to Manjaro, and it has been nothing short of awesome and fantastic. The project leader, Phil Miller, he actually was, back in the day, he was actually the lead of Chikara, yeah, some, you know, the other Arch-based KDE kind of derivative. Chakra, that's it, sorry. So yeah, he was actually the lead of Chakra, that he moved over to Manjaro, and you know, I reached out to him one day, because I was looking to move off of Ubuntu for a myriad of reasons. You know, the packages were all mismatched versions, and it was just a mess, and it was getting worse as time went on. So the last version of Sonar off of Ubuntu was 13.10, and even the second I pushed out that version, I was like, I need to switch. And so I kept hearing about a lot of these Arch derivatives. I was like, you know what? To be based off of sort of Arch would be the ultimate way, the ultimate goal, is because Arch always has the latest and greatest. And, you know, anytime there's a new functionality or new feature within, you know, assistive technology, Arch always has it first. And then other distros are lucky to get it 6 months to a year later. So I was really looking to switch. And, stumbled across Manjaro, saw they had a community, like a couple community versions, and I was like, oh, that's cool. So then I was like, let me try to email these guys. So I found Phil's email, I emailed him, and I told him who I was, and showed him the Sonar GNU Linux link, and said I'd love to, you know, be based off Manjaro. You think it's possible? And he emailed right away, pretty much right away, and just said, absolutely, let's do this. Tell me what I need to do. And he's just been working with me and Kyle throughout this whole time. And, you know, he adjusted the whole build system, which is awesome. He totally fixed the installer, because a lot of parts of it weren't accessible. And he, like, spent, it almost seemed like a straight 48 hours, like, working on it and fixing everything that he possibly could. And he just went above and beyond the call of duty. And he's really, like, he's really made Sonar kind of part of the Manjaro team. Like, he's even given Sonar like a spot on the Manjaro forums. He's blogged about Sonar and stuff. I mean, it's really great to know that Phil is really behind us, and him and his team have done whatever they can to make the transition smooth and to make sure everything within Manjaro is accessible, because we receive all the upstream stuff from Manjaro. So Phil's been awesome.
That is very cool.
Well, I mean, I got to ask you though, Jonathan, can you go into a little bit more depth? Just as a layman, how, I don't understand how Ubuntu was not meeting your needs. I mean, Ubuntu has PPAs. Ubuntu is the distro of choice for newbies. Ubuntu supposedly can work on everything. It has great driver support. How can Ubuntu not meet your needs?
Can I jump in there really quick and ask another question on top of that? It's an Ubuntu question as well. As you had mentioned, you had gone from 12.04 to 13.10. How come you didn't stay on the LTS?
I do still have a floating around the 12.04 LTS, but it's only on my SourceForge site. I don't even link to it anymore from the Sonar page, because I actually tried installing that recently, and it was atrocious, in my opinion. After being so used to the Sonar based off Manjaro, I was like, this is awful. I was like, I don't want anyone to download and install this. This is no good. So I still have it, but I don't promote it on the Sonar page.
And then Doris' questions about, you know, what...
Sure.
Why, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, for the average person, Ubuntu is still fine, but when you're depending on accessibility, so, you know, back in the day, Ubuntu is always known for always being kind of like the first distro with the latest version of GNOME, which was true up until 11.10 or so, or 12.04, where they gradually started slipping more and more behind because they were using GNOME but building Unity on top of it. And so GNOME would change some bits and bobs underneath, and that would break Unity. So they started kind of slacking behind and being like 6 months to a year behind GNOME, just so they could keep everything stable. So when they started doing that on GNOME 13.10, on Ubuntu 13.10 rather, they're using GNOME 3.8, which 3.10 was already out. So they had GNOME 3.8, but they had Orca 3.10, they had Nautilus 3.6, and every other sort of GNOME package was just all over the place. GNOME Control Center 3.6, you know. And there were some bugs that were in Nautilus but were fixed later on. But, you know, we didn't have that. And, you know, GNOME 3.10 was way better than GNOME 3.8. It was a way, you know, leaps and bounds better. And so just from all of that hodgepodge, you know, packages, like, do make a difference in accessibility. It's like, yeah, sure. I mean, I could just create a whole PPA of all of GNOME 3.10 and all the GNOME dependencies. But I mean, that's, I might as well just create another distro from scratch if I'm going to do that. So if I was going to do that, might as well look at switching over to Arch, where that takes all that headache off the table.
Well, the first question I asked is just a hypothetical. Hypothetically, if Ubuntu would have made, let's just say, stayed with the same version of GNOME, but made Unity itself more accessible, could that have helped alleviate the problems, or that really wasn't the problem?
Hypothetically, maybe, possibly, but as of as of Ubuntu 12.04, the dash, for the lack of a better word, it's whatever pops up when you press the Windows key, where you can kind of like search packages or search your files or whatever. That part of it, Orca couldn't read anything in it. So you could type something in and hit enter, and it's a crapshoot. Like, hopefully it auto-filled in what I typed. And you don't know until it opens, you know, opens up either the file or the program or whatever. And so people are like, oh, you know, and Unity 3D itself was terribly inaccessible outside of the dash. So they actually made a Unity 2D, which was way more accessible than Unity 3D, although the dash still wasn't accessible. So they said, don't worry. 14.04 comes out, everything's going to be fixed. Because they, after 12.04, they dropped even supporting Unity 2D, so that was now dead on the shelf. They, it maybe was getting, you know, security updates, but that's it. So Unity 2D as of 12.04 was done. And so they're like, don't worry, 14.04, 3D, going to be way more accessible. Well, 14.04 comes out, and the dash still is not accessible. Other parts are-ish, but it's still, you know, if I were going to base Sonar off that, I'd be hoping Ubuntu is going to follow through and fix what they're going to fix, and putting all of my eggs in that basket and just crossing my fingers and hoping they would follow through.
Gotcha. Well, then the stupid, obvious to me follow-up question is, Arch? Arch? The distro that takes 5 minutes to install but 13 hours to configure, and what I keep hearing people, which I don't even know if they use Arch, say how, oh, things keep breaking, you do update, things keep breaking. Well, why would you then say, well, that sounds like a perfect base for us to go for? How can it work? Teach me.
Sure. So that was the reason for Manjaro, because Manjaro essentially did to Arch what Ubuntu sort of did to Debian, at least back in the day. So with Manjaro, it's almost as if it were. I mean, you know, if you didn't tell someone, they would possibly think it was Ubuntu. It would boot into it boots into a live session. You see the desktop come up. You see the little install button. You click install, and it walks you through a graphical installer just like Ubuntu. You do your partitioning and, you know, pick your time zone, keyboard, you know, username, password, click finish, wait a few minutes, reboot, bam, and you're in a Arch-based system. So in 20 minutes, you're running an Arch-based system with a full desktop and everything.
And I mean, stuff doesn't just randomly break with updates.
No, because this is the beautiful thing about Manjaro is Phil has created a patch for Pac-Man, which is by far the coolest package name ever. But Pac-Man is, you know, essentially the apt-get or the yum of Arch Linux. So what Phil has done with Pac-Man is he's created a system called his getbox. So what he does is he clones the entire Arch repo every day. And so he clones the Arch repo, pulls it over into the Manjaro repos, and in Pac-Man, Phil has created three branches. There's unstable, testing, and stable. So this is cool too about Sonar. You can literally switch in between those branches on the fly. So in Sonar, by default, we use a stable branch. But if you want to switch to unstable, you issue a few commands, and then bam, your whole system is running unstable. If you can downgrade back down to stable flawlessly, and it won't break your system. So
that sounds like black magic.
Seriously. But so anyway, when Phil clones the Arch repo, everything goes in unstable. So if you're running the unstable branch in Manjaro, you're essentially a day behind Arch Linux's, you know, daily releases. After unstable, if everything gets a clean bill of health, you know, nothing breaks the system, it moves up into testing. And then it stays in testing for a few days, 3-4 days. And when that gets a clean bill of health, it moves into stable. So if you're running the stable branch, you have a 7, you know, to 10 day cushion, and you're 7 to 10 days behind Arch Linux proper. So with that cushion, I've yet to see my system break, because when things go into unstable, and if it does sort of break something, they wait until they fix it, and then they move it into testing, and then they make sure nothing breaks in testing. So by the time it gets to stable, it's been vetted through two other repos. So you 99.99% sure your system's not going to break. So that's the fantastic thing about Manjaro.
That's a distro that I have not played with very much.
I highly recommend it.
And I'm not going to lie, I haven't either. Well, and here's to me the kicker. You requiring or really liking to having latest software is really because of bug fixes and because of more accessibility features.
Sure.
Correct?
And I mean, along with that, though, can be regression. So, you know, it's kind of take the good with the bad, sort of.
Gotcha. And the other thing I keep thinking to myself is, you set to me what a higher bar is to the quote unquote normal user. Because when I literally stop and think about it, 99.99% of the users out there who use computers, not Linux, but just use computers, don't care what version of software that they're on, as long as what they need to do works. I'm a firm believer. Again, 99.99% of the users out there don't even know what features are on a piece of software that they don't have, because they don't have the newest version yet. So you're actually giving them what is, I mean, 7 days old to them might as well be split second new.
Right. Especially with other distros, if they're, you know, 6 months to a year behind. So, I mean, that, seven or 10 days behind is still, you know, bleeding edge.
Very cool. Now, here's my question. How usable, okay, hypothetically, I have multiple people in my house with different disabilities. If I basically take the distro and put it on multiple computers, one for each of them, I mean, how hard is it to set up? You say for the blind user, basically they can virtually do it themselves. What about the users with other other?
Sure, we have a bunch of keyboard shortcuts already set up in Sonar, which I still need to get on the website. But let's say there's one computer, and there's a blind person, you know, maybe a low vision person, and you know, some other, maybe someone that needs the on-screen keyboard. Everything is set up in a way to try and keep each other out of their own way. So let's say the blind user is using Sonar, and he's done, and he walks away. and the low vision user comes over and says, ah, you know what, I can see well enough, I don't need the screen reader, they'll know the keyboard shortcut, boom, shut off sonar. Then they know the keyboard shortcut, boom, turn on the zoom. And then they'll know how to zoom in and out with the keyboard shortcuts. Then, you know, that person walks away and maybe the other person has low motor skills and the magnification was left on. Well, they can, you know, use the on-screen keyboard, shut off the magnification and start clicking away in the on-screen keyboard and getting their work done. So it tries to stay out of his way, but be as usable as possible for everyone that might be using it.
See, to me, that's awesome because I'm the guy that always says shoot for the niche, which in this case would mean you literally like make separate desktops or separate distributions or separate logins even for each person of each different type of need. But the fact that you literally have it all, for lack of a better word, conjoined into one experience where people can interactively hop in and out of, that to me is like, you know, we all know for something to compete with something else, it can't be as good. It literally has to be better. And that to me is what you have done with Sonar GNU Linux. You've literally, in my eyes, made it better than the other experiences on the other operating systems when you have people with different needs.
Yeah, and I mean, that, like I said at the beginning, that's really my goal. I want people that depend on adaptive technology, assistive technology, you know, whatever you want to call it, to use free software. And I want Sonar to be that solution. There's no reason why you know, they need to use proprietary like a proprietary operating system and then pay or have someone else pay a lot of money for proprietary software that maybe only 20% of it actually does what they need it to do. You know, with Sonar, as we build it more of a community around it, I mean, we can really start tailoring a lot of this stuff to start giving it the exact functionality it needs for the exact use case scenarios.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Now, a stupid question. You say community. How can someone join the community and offer help or assistance with, I mean, anything that you could need help with, from bug tracking, documentation, communications?
Sure. I mean, you just go to the Sonar GNU Linux site. We have a bunch of contact stuff, mailing lists. We have our own Mumble room. You know, you can email us. And the Sonar team's getting bigger, which I'm glad to say. Like, I brought on Kyle Broward. He's the project, the lead developer, but I'm sort of the project manager now, where Kyle, he's literally taking on a lot of the day-to-day stuff in the building, making sure everything builds properly. You know, we talk with each other, one another, a couple times a week, but he's taking care of the kind of the day-to-day grind. And, so if it wasn't for him, Sonar 2014.1 wouldn't have gotten out of the door. And then we actually, picked up another team member the other day. His name is, Kendall Clark. And he's actually working on building the mate version of Sonar. That's going to come out hopefully in a month or two. We have an early alpha that's we're working on right now. And mate Mate team has worked extremely close with us to make sure, that mate is extremely accessible. And we actually discovered a huge breakthrough the other day, where now, before the panels and stuff, Orca wasn't reading the panels or reading, like if you're switching from application to application, it wasn't telling you what application you're in. But we fixed all that now, so that's huge. Now mate is like 97% accessible, so that's awesome. So Kendall's working on that, and we actually picked up Larry Bushy from Going Linux. He's offered his services to work on the website. He's going to do a bunch of documentation for us, and he's going to do a ton of stuff for us.
Dude, if anyone doesn't know who Larry Bushy is, all I got to say this. One of the most cordial sounding, soft-spoken fellows who, dare I say, has ninja skills when it comes to educating and sharing knowledge. GoingLinux.com. I will say like this. They are the go-to Linux podcast. I have lots of fun doing this podcast, and I think we do a very good job. But when I meet someone who says, I want to learn Linux, I have zero hesitation to say, go to goinglinux.com. If you need help, email Larry. Larry, honestly, I do what Larry does, which is I try to help anyone who contacts me in any shape, way, or form. I think Larry had a past life where he was an educator.
Probably.
Because he really does it very well. Larry's always behind in his podcast, and he constantly deletes podcasts because he just can't catch up. So if he doesn't listen to this, or doesn't catch this episode, that's okay, because go to his website, check it out, listen to it. And he did have a very interesting CMS tool that he talked about a couple episodes ago.
The Maker.
Which, can you have a better name than the
Probably
Maker?
Probably not. I mean, Pac-Man's pretty awesome, though.
Well, Pac-Man's pretty awesome, but the Maker is like something out of Doctor
Who. Totally. Yeah, he emailed me the other day and just said, hey, how can I help? You know, let's do some website stuff. He even wants to write kind of a starting guide or getting started, you know, documentation for Sonar. He was just like, I can do this. So he's kind of all in that area for Sonar. So I'm really excited about that.
I have not got better news today than I got that. That is awesome. Now, here's a stupid question. How can individuals, let's just say if we have hypothetically, extra income floating around for one reason or another, how can we as people help support Sonar GNU Linux and to help this kind of stuff moving forward that you work so
Sure, if you want to go to theacf.tk, that'll bring you right to the accessiblecomputingfoundation.org. And, you know, if you want to become a member for $2 a month, you can. You want to make a one-time donation, you can do that too. And all of that money goes to, you know, getting this stuff done. And without it, you know, it probably wouldn't be possible. So every bit does help, and it does go a long way. And, you know, now that I have Kyle on the team, I have Kendall working on the mate version, that really frees up my time to start really advocating Sonar to other organizations. I'm going to go to Boston soon to a place called Easter Seals where they work with blind and low vision individuals, and I'm supposed to go there and demo Sonar to them and show them what kind of a difference this will make. Because I told them flat out, if you use Sonar, you'll never have to tell anyone again you can't help them with assistive technology. You won't have to turn away a client because you don't have money to pay for that screen reader or because you don't have money to pay for that screen magnification. Like I told them, if you can get 100 computers donated to you, we can install 100 operating systems on those computers and get them in people's hands. And so they're ecstatic about that.
And you know what, Jonathan? I don't know why I didn't think about this earlier, but I was being lazy. So I don't know if you know that before I left and I started my own company, I worked for, in Oregon, we have regional educational service districts. And the service districts they started by providing support for autistic, blind, deaf students from birth to kindergarten. Essentially, that's when the public schools kind of kicked in and helped out. But I remember seeing low vision readers and soundboards and all of this other stuff that you're talking about, and I don't know why I haven't even thought about taking this into, because I still have friends there, I still know the staff, I still know the directors, and I should take this into them and say, you know, the company spends, the organization spends a lot of money, and we have all of these desktops that could run this very well.
Yeah, totally. And
pushing this out to education is going to work out really well.
One, Martin, you were waiting for your beard to come back to a full state.
I wanted to go in with the. Now I'm going to use my hairy shaver, and I'm going to say, "Fill my face." Okay, now let's talk. I may skip one depending on who it is.
Well, here's a similar question to what Martin just said. You said you're working on a mate version of this. The default version of this is
GNOME 3.12. So it's the latest GNOME.
Okay. Well, the stupid question is, what would you suggest is the hardware requirements for this? And the reason I'm asking this, most of these questions I'm asking people are softball questions. I already know the answer to these. But Arch is supposed to be one of those distros that better utilize hardware, aka you should need less hardware to run it than a Ubuntu derivative.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, GNOME 3.10 and 3.12, they really turned the corner and you know, spruced it up a lot, made it a lot quicker than it was, you know, back in 3.6, 3.8, 3.4. I'm running it right now on a ThinkPad T500. It's a Core 2 Duo. I think it's 2.4 gigahertz, 2 gigs of RAM. And it's blazing fast. Like it runs totally fine. This laptop's 3 or 4 years old. I have another ThinkPad, an X61. It works on it. It's usable. But you know, knowing what it works like on my other laptop, I don't use it. I use the Mate version on that, and Mate just completely flies on the X61, which is like a first gen. I think it's a Core 2 Duo, but it's like the first gen. And again, it has 3 gigs of RAM, but the Mate version is smoking fast.
Wow.
And that laptop's like 8 years old.
So Are you, I don't know why, you know, this, I wonder if pushing this out to education would be on your, on a to-do list or somebody's to-do list.
Yeah, it is for me. I actually spoke with a woman that was a Harvard law professor, and now she works kind of like with the Berkman Center, which is sort of, I don't want to use the word think tank, but the Berkman Center does a lot of interesting research and stuff like that. And I spoke with her, and she's really interested on trying to get into the school systems with this, because she had a few blind students and she knows what the system's like, where all the shortcomings are. And she said herself that this can make a difference in the school system.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I'll say this. Here's what might, and this is just throwing stuff against the wall again, Jonathan. One of the stupid, I know one of the biggest issues you've had is, well, two, resources and getting the word out kind of thing. One of the stupid things that I think could make, let's say, someone like Martin's task easier, like Larry was talking about, possibly like an intro thing, dare I say, like a pre-built base template for a presentation.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
A like brochure type PDF of one or two pages of this is what it is, this is what it can do for you, just, you know,
blurs. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because here's another stupid thing. Like Martin said, I didn't think about this either, Martin. In my 9-to-5, we have a human resources department that asked to have a public-facing kiosk-type computer for people to walk in to where they could fill out applications and stuff. And one of the things I do remember that basically put a dead stop to this was it wasn't compliant.
ADA?
I can never remember the numbers.
Is it ADA?
503C? Oh. Yeah. It was an ADA 503C compliant type interface kind of thing. And it's because they were running the thing on Windows XP.
Yeah.
You know, to where the HR people had no idea how to start or stop assistive technology on that computer. Where if we had to turn our GNU Linux sitting at the computer and basically just a cheat sheet available to where it would just be, oh, what do you need help with? Screen zooming? Oh, hit, shift and J.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, whatever. Exactly.
Very cool, very cool. So here's another stupid question, Jonathan. You've literally built this up from a concept and idea, dare I say, cliche is, a dream, into something actual, factual, building up, getting people involved out there, getting other communities out there involved, getting other community support involved. That, to me, seems epic. But dare I ask, where do you see Sonar GNU Linux in like 3 to 5 years?
I think it's going to be easier maybe to really start building the user base outside of the United States, I kind of say, unfortunately. I think there's a greater need in other countries where governments aren't propping up other companies and basically funding them and, you know, how the whole system works. So I think outside of the United States is where it's possibly going to take off quicker. It's going to have to be a ground up sort of effort, I think, here in the States, where, you know, I mean, Easter Seals is great and they're good. You know, they're working with me. They want me to come down. They want me to demo it. They want me to train their people on how to use it. That is not the norm. You know, they, all these other agencies have just relationships with other companies, and this, all this is great, all this is works, nothing's broken, so why do we need this free thing? All this other stuff works, it's paid for, there's no need for this. Why are you here?
Right. Well, I'll say, I wouldn't say the greatest need is outside the U.S. I'll put it like this. The U.S. is only one small part of the world in actual factual numbers and stats. Also, I would say, I think there would be possibly greater impact outside
of the U.S. Sure, that too. Yeah.
You know, because like, you know, we've talked in the past about certain countries where literally blind people are looked at being cursed humans of the earth that were cursed by the devil or Satan or whatever entity.
Yeah.
That's weird, to be quite honest. Sonar GNU Linux here is in America, a great tool, a great empowering opportunity to let people to do a lot of things that to be honest, sighted users and normal users, quote unquote, take for granted.
Yeah.
And we in this country, our biggest problem, I think, is taking things for granted. Outside of the country, this literally could be like handing Luke Skywalker a lightsaber in power.
Well, yeah, because I think we talked about maybe mostly on Geeksters that time I was on, where I mean, yeah, Sonar does give access to a computer, but there's so much more that it can do than that. It offers the opportunity for entrepreneurial, you know, people to start their own business around Sonar. And there could be thousands or millions of people with disabilities that could now create their own job and be like, hey, I'm going to start a tech support company here in India, and I'm going to support all the locals that are using Sonar, and they're going to pay me whatever. Or there could be developers that spring out of this and start adding to Sonar, getting paid to add functionality to Sonar, you know, developing their own assistive technology to add into Sonar. And, you know, the sky is really the limit. I mean, giving them access to computers is the first step, but who knows what will happen after that?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the example I use for that is, what if Stephen Hawking was born 200 years ago?
Exactly.
You know, he would have been a slug in a bedroom that they would have just let die.
Yeah, pretty much.
To be very frank, and to be honest, to be very blunt, and maybe too blunt, but that's the honest God truth. Yeah, and I'll just say this. If there are computer technicians listening, a light bulb should have just went off above your head and caused like third-degree burns on the top of your head. This is a super niche business that you can get into and completely own. In computer repair type businesses, you always try to set yourself apart. You always try to do something different that other people don't do or cannot do. Having this type of service that you can offer to people, there's nobody else on the face of the planet that can offer the type of services that you could offer to people with the use of Sonar GNU Linux. Great economic models can be made off of this, is all I'll say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could start, you know, like a little demonstration thing, like in your public library, try to invite people to come down and be like, you know, anyone with any disability, you want to use a computer, come down and, you know, check out this demo. Like, there's so many things that an individual could do in the area they live in. Again, the sky is the limit. Motivation is the limit, I guess. And, you know, you can, me behind Sonar, you know, I've had a lot of people even recently be like, you should be charging like royalties on this. And I'm like, no, that's not what this is all about. Like,
totally missing the point.
And I'm like, I want to give the empowerment to whoever wants to do whatever they can with it. Like, I want to provide the end to the means, I guess, maybe, or that's the wrong way of putting it. But I want to provide, you know, that tool that can be used in a myriad of ways. And I want to see what other people can do with it. That's my goal.
And that's awesome. That's what makes this project going to be successful and is successful is, you know, you're not out there just to make a project so your pockets get bigger. You're out there because this is something you love, something you live, and you have a passion for it, and nobody can take that from you. And because of that, it's going to be, I mean, it is successful, and it's only, you know, Dora touched on it a little bit. Where's this going to be in 5 years? I wonder how many people will have their hands on this and how many lives will be changed because of this.
Yeah. That's the exciting part. I'd love to get an email a few years from now saying, I downloaded Sonar. I live in Sweden or wherever, and I've done this and that. I started programming because of Sonar, and yeah, I made my first commit to Sonar GNU Linux yesterday, or, you know, something like that. I just look forward to seeing more and more emails like that coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Jonathan, okay, last stupid question, I promise. The other team members on Sonar GNU Linux, is there any chance they're coming to OLF?
Probably not. Kyle lives in North Carolina, and Kendall lives in Texas.
So that means we have to then create a fund to send you, I, Martin, and Cody
to Southeast Linux Fest.
Southeast
and
Linux
Texas
Fest,
Linux. And Texas, yeah, Linux. Yeah, basically.
Well, I'll say the big pluses for that is, we can go to Texas Linux Fest and see Tracy.
Exactly.
And then we can go to Southeast Linux Fest and basically see everyone else on the planet that we don't see.
Yeah.
Like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
And we can go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame.
I was
just kidding. You'd have to trick me and say, hey, we're at an amusement park. Check it out.
Exactly. And then when you hear the engine, that doesn't sound like a roller coaster.
No, that's a big screen TV. Oh, don't worry about it. I won't go with you to the NASCAR thing, too. I get dizzy.
Very cool, Jonathan. Now, the other stupid softball question. Is there anything else you would like to discuss, talk about, promote, encourage other people to take part in, or anything like
that? Yeah, there's one last thing. I ripped this idea off from Link, from the Linux Link Tech Show. He used to, he ran this website a bunch of years ago, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember the name of his website.
Oh, wait. It was called something linuxbox.org.
Yeah, use Linuxbox or something Linux. Oh, yeah.
Get Linuxbox.
Yeah.
Free Linuxbox?
Maybe. That might have been it. That might have been it. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm sort of being the middleman. So I'm just calling it Computers for Sonar, and it's a generic name order. But so if you go to sonar.gnu/linux.com, you'll see across the top, actually Larry kind of changed the website, I think. So it may or may not be there. I haven't checked. So anyways, Computers for Sonar, essentially what it is, there's two people. One person has a computer, not really using it. Maybe they think it's old. They just want to get rid of it. You know, they want a new computer. Don't want to throw it away and, you know, don't want to bother, you know, having to, like, recycle it properly and safely. So it's just sitting in your closet or under your desk or whatever. So you can email Sonar and say, hey, here's my name. I have this computer. Here are the specs. Here's my address. I say, great. Thank you. We'll keep you on a database. Then we'll have the blind user email Sonar and say, you know what? I don't have a computer. I'd love to have a computer. I'd love to run Sonar. Is there any way you can find a computer for me? And I'd say, actually, yes. Person, you know, X has in the database has this computer. So I would essentially give person X and person Y each the email addresses. They would then talk with each other, contact each other. And I just ask that the person getting rid of the computer only charge whatever costs to ship and to have Sonar already installed on the computer when they ship it, just in case it's a first-time user and we don't want them, you know, maybe having difficulties, or we want to make sure Sonar works properly on the computer before it gets sent out. So we ask only charge shipping and please install Sonar before you ship it out. And we want to try connecting, you know, used computers with people that don't have computers.
Dude, that's awesome.
That is awesome. And well yes, that's awesome. I have more to say, but we'll have to talk about it afterwards.
I don't take the credit. I give that to Link. Link from Linux Link Tech Show. So you can thank him. I'm just stealing his idea. I thought it was great, and I thought it could be used in this way. So
I'm just thinking about, you know, you want to do a one-to-one. I'm trying to figure out how you can do many-to-many, not many-to-one, but because, of, you know, I was thinking of education or places right now that they're kind of still in a Windows XP to 7 transition. You're going to get all those Windows 7 or Windows XP boxes. I'm curious, there's no place like, I wonder if Sonar was bigger, if you could have a warehouse, like we could send it to you, you could store it and then distribute it from within Sonar itself, as opposed to, there's just no way that I could, you know, if I got a hold of a donation, there's no way that I could hold 30 computers waiting for 30 people to call me.
Well, if it,
but if I gave it, you know,
yeah, if it came down to something like that, I do have a way to store computers. So it's not a big deal. I'd prefer not to do that, but I mean, I don't want to stop someone from getting a computer either, so I would do it, but I'd prefer, you know, if it was the one-to-one sort of thing, I would rather just kind of sort of be the middleman. Right now, even it's a manual thing that I'd have to do. Hopefully in the future, I could find a way to kind of create some kind of database or whatever where people could enter in their information, and then people looking for a computer could peruse that database and be like, oh, this guy lives kind of close to me, at least the shipping would be less, and contact that person and say, hey, I'd like the computer, you know. So hopefully someday it could be sort of a semi-automated kind of thing. But right now, you know, people email me and I just kind of keep a text file saying, okay, we have this many computers. And, you know, as people email looking for a computer, I'll hook them up.
Well, then that maybe this can go out to our listeners of saying, if you know somebody who needs a computer for Sonar, check with your schools, check with, you know, maybe... you know, I know of a company who just got some from hospitals, but think outside the box of groups of people that are going to be doing or are in the process of doing a transition from Windows XP or, you know, or just upgrading hardware. Keep those in mind, because if they have 30 of them and you just say, hey, I just need one, chances are they're probably going to go ahead and just give you one.
Yeah.
And then you can give it to your friend or set up with Sonar. And now you've probably gotten, you know, a great machines. I mean, the computers that I just was working for a nonprofit, they were given computers that were like Core i3s.
Man, that's pretty sweet.
And I was like, what? They just said, here you go, here's five of them.
Man, that's pretty sweet.
You know, I know that's overkill for what Sonar needs, but the possibilities are out there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that just shows you, like, you know, people are like, you know, this thing's 2 years old, it's useless. And it's like, not with Sonar, it's going to run like a top, right. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, in education where I worked, we had a 2-year rotation, and we would literally every 2 years, we'd rotate out 100 to 500 computers.
Wow.
I would get pallets and pallets of computers from Dell. And we would just spend, you know, a year rotating it, wait a year, and the next year start on another rotation.
Wow.
Wow. Obama, the U.S. government, and Dell and HP, whatever computers, thanks you. They salute your company because every 2 years it's fast.
Welcome to Oregon.
Well, hey, if that means my taxes are less every year, power on.
I don't know if it's every 2 years. I could be wrong. But anyways, you get the point.
Yeah. Okay, there will be links to all this in the notes. Everything we talked about from Link, I always want to call him Link Fezdin.
It's Fezdin.
Link Fezdin's to his blog, to Tilts, to Going Linux, Gitorious, Computers for Sonar, Sonar GNU Linux, all of it. It's all going to be there in the show. I cannot implore people enough. I really don't want to be one of those people that sound like a, what's it called? Like hashtag activist stuff.
Oh, you don't want to change the color of your Twitter icon?
I don't want anybody to change icons or, you know, just, you know, plus one postings or like stuff. Okay. Do something. Get computers from your family members that they don't want anymore. Go to your local school, you know, go to your local places of business. I'm not going to lie. I see the torrents. Do something. Okay. There is plenty of impact we as human beings can make on this earth each and every day. We all want to make change until it comes time to make a real change. Most of us then change our mind. I'm asking people, do this one thing. Donate money to Sonar. Get computers. Do something. Help the human race, dare I say. Let's not worry about political parties. Let's not worry about religious segments. Let's not worry about stupid indie games on stupid sites. Do something. That's all I ask. Anything. I don't care what it is.
And speaking of, I would like to give a shout out. I'm pretty sure, 99% sure, I've gotten quite a few members in the last maybe 4 to 6 months, and I'm pretty sure they all are Linux for the rest of us listeners, so I'd like to thank everyone that has become a member, and yes, you know, you guys made this version of Sonar possible, so thank you all for everyone that are members, and everyone that is a member, not through Linux for the rest of us. I thank everyone that has donated and pledged and become members, and it all is a great help. So thank you, everyone, for participating in any way that you can. I even got an email maybe 6 months ago. They're like, yeah, dude, I spelt something wrong on the homepage. And I was like, whoops. Hey, thanks. You know, cause you look like an idiot if you have misspelled stuff. And I was like, thanks for letting me know. That's a huge help, because I'm lucky I spell my name right half the time. So
yeah, if I could, I would literally give shirts, hats, whatever, to anyone who supports you, period, Jonathan. And I'll just say this. I dog food, okay? I do this myself. I give monthly donations to Jonathan. Twice a year, I hand him beers as many times as I can.
And I appreciate it.
And to be...
He thinks so.
I'm sure you do. And not trying to sound dumb. I feel better, because I know I'm doing something when I'm sitting here talking with Jonathan, recording it and publishing it. Not only publishing it, putting it out there as a formal record forever. Anytime anyone does a Google search where they look up accessibility, free software, and Linux, I'm doing everything I can to try to make people find this. Getting the word out is very important. But just posting it on your local Facebook, while it doesn't hurt, it really does questionably help, especially on something like Facebook, where they literally curate what gets shown to everyone else. But, you know, organize something. Put it, like Jonathan said, go to your local library and just show a couple people how to do this. Showing them hands-on kind of thing, these kind of things that can be done, no doubt will literally empower somebody else and open their eyes up too.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be surprised if you start talking about Sonar and people would just be like, I didn't think anything like that could exist, or I never thought of someone with, you know, poor hand use using a computer. You think everyone has two hands and they could use a keyboard. You never think of it. And you start bringing these things up, and then, you know, the light bulb starts to go off. Like I said, there's roughly a billion people in the world that have some type of disability, and I want Sonar to meet as many of those disabilities as I possibly can.
Right, and I'll just throw this out there. Somebody wants to do something stupid, but yet could still help a lot. why not do something like this? Take Sonar GNU Linux, record the screen of what's going on, turn on the webcam software that can record eye tracking, and set your cat in front of the computer. And video record your cat split screen. Your cat on one side, the computer screen on the other, and let's see what kind of things cats can do with Sonar.
There you go. That sounds like a plan. Or even like a ferret, or chinchillas. That'd be cute.
Capybara?
Yeah, there you go.
Chupacabra.
Those don't exist.
Well, I thought Fred was the chupacabra.
And?
And?
No, Fred wouldn't use that. It's Linux.
It would
crash on him.
Dude, Fred, that wasn't me, Fred. I love you, brother. All right, Jonathan, I really do honestly thank you for coming out. But more importantly, I thank you for everything that you do. You literally help me, feel better about the stuff that I'm doing. Again, this is a podcasting network where we do not go out of our way to suck money out of everyone's pockets. We don't go out of our way to lie and say, oh, this product out here is great. Our main goal is to really just propagate good information. And that's why whenever Jonathan says, can I be on? Literally last time he said, can I be on? I said, can you be on tonight? Because I know whenever Jonathan comes on, we're going to always talk about good, enlightening kind of stuff. And of course, with Martin Rambo Banda, that's just the trifecta of, good times.
Exactly.
I was curious where he's going with that pause.
Yeah. Awkward pause. Okay. I don't really think we have much more, really.
Yeah, I think we ran the gamut on Sonar.
Yeah, just about.
I like it. I got to find somebody to give it to. I know.
Yeah, I was quiet for that one too.
I don't know what.
All I gotta say is a lot could be done with that. Anyone into audio engineering?
Well, if people want to get a hold of us, if they have questions for Linux for the Rest of Us, you can get us send us an email at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can send an email or a voicemail to 7076-PODNUT. That's 707-676-3688. Don't forget, it's September. What is it? I think Tim told me the other day his wife knew how many shopping days were left until Christmas. Cause I mentioned it.
That's not good.
Like, oh, it's this many shopping Saturdays or shopping weekends or something. And I was, it's in the teens, 20s. So anyways. Podnuts.com/Amazon for shopping needs. If you have anything you want to buy, and you know you do, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Doesn't cost you anything else. A little bit kicks back to the Podnuts community. And then what do we do with that little bit of kickback that we get from that? We end up donating it out because we support the ones who support you. And some of that money does go to Jonathan, and it goes to support the Sonar Foundation. So we thank you for everybody who's purchasing stuff. Go buy more stuff. That's all I got to say.
Martin, I love you. And I'll just say this, the people that do support us, Nick Shaw from foolishit.com, D7, tech USB, we definitely love having them support us, but we literally support them first and foremost. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to hear a definite good time, you have to listen to Martin Rambo Bando, Tim Bauermeister when he can make it, and Mitch Heyman when he can make it on to Geeksters. It is definitely, I will say, some of the best Podnuts time that I have ever listened
to. Here.
Well, thank you. We try to have a good time, and it's a little bit of tech. It's a whole lot of silly, and it's I have a great time with those guys. The whole thing is good.
Sell the sizzle, Martin.
Oh, the sizzle. It's fantastic.
No. If you want to sell the sizzle, you need a an audio clip of Tim laughing.
Oh. Well, you got to come and listen to the show for that. That's live. You don't want to hear that secondhand. You want to hear that live.
Tease, Jonathan. Tease.
Oh, okay.
I can't sell sizzle.
I can't either. I'll too busy eating it.
I was trying to figure out what I was going to say to that. I can sell bacon, but I eat it. That's sizzle.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Bacon-powered motorcycle put out by Hormel, the bacon company. Yeah, it's Hormel, ain't it?
I hope it's not.
It uses bacon grease. And here's the reason why I'm okay with it. It doesn't eat my bacon. It just uses the part that I don't eat, the grease. So it's officially door approved.
Did you ever hear Jim Gaffigan's shtick on bacon?
Oh yeah.
Oh man, when he's like, oh. Even bacon when it's cooking sounds like people are applauding for it.
Yep.
All right.
Very cool. I think we've taken this to the end. You guys know where to reach us. You know how to call us. You know how to email us. Have a great night, guys. See you next time.
See ya.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.